Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. Welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. That's me. I'm so glad you joined me today. I hope your weekend was good. I was a little shocked with the preview of winter here in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area where we had this snowfall that looked like, this is accumulating. I'm starting to panic because I still have to rake and do all kinds of other stuff before it snows. But it was a little preview of things to come, but by the end of the night, it was gone, and I was really kind of grateful. Because I have to remain grateful all the time. God tells us to be grateful. And I think it's important that we remind each other to be grateful. And so I'm reminding you today to be grateful. In all circumstances, give thanks. And I love the passage in John where Jesus said, you know, in this world you will have trouble. But be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. And I am always reminded about the idea of being of good cheer, of having a eternal mindset that says this is temporal. This will get through this. This is stuff that God is using in our lives to shape us, to make us into something, the man or woman of God that he wants us to be. So, you know, it is what it is. And I was seeing that in the news today in 1949, the Reverend Billy Graham began his ministry. How cool is that? And we started the radio station in 48 or 49. Matt's given me the big shrug. I don't know, he's saying. You say nothing, which I like. So we have a great show today. We've got Ray Comfort. Do you know Ray Comfort? He's only written 70 books. I haven't read 70 books in my life, and he's written them. And the book he wrote is called The Final Curtain, Fame, Fortune, and Futile Lives. And it talks about the sadness of people in show business and people who are famous who take their own life. They fight depression. They've committed suicide. And we're amazed at the people that have done this. I mean, you think of Robin Williams, who obviously a very funny guy who seems to have enjoyed his success and his life, and then he takes it. So we're going to talk to Ray Comfort about his new book, The Final Curtain. And James Emery White is going to be on the show as well. And he is talking about the rise of the nuns. And that's N-O-N-E-S, just so you know, because I grew up Catholic, so you might think the otherwise. But he wrote a book about understanding and reaching the religiously unaffiliated, and he's started a church in Mecklenburg, South Carolina, with one family. And today he has 10,000 people that come to services on five campuses on a weekend. And 70% of them are previously unchurched. So he's doing something right. We're going to definitely want to find out about that. And then in hour two, part two of my Bill's Bible study is going to be here in studio. So Jay and Mike are going to be here, and we're going to, if you heard Bill's Bible study part one, you're going to want to stick around for Bill's Bible study part two. These are guys that I've been in a Bible study with for 3 years, and we talked about the third year anniversary of our Bible study, and maybe we should come on the air and talk about what it's like to start in a Bible study and what we're learning and how we're going about it and how much we've grown to like each other and dislike each other. It's going to be great. I'm looking forward to that. And then coming up on November 1st, how about this for fun? Bill Arnold Afternoons Live, that would be here November 1st at the studios here at the University of Northwestern. And that is open to everyone. So you want to go to myfaithradio.com. Go to Afternoons with Bill Arnold and say, click on the button that says, I'd come to that as long as there's, you know, cookies and stuff and coffee. And if there's stuff, maybe swag that I could walk away with something, like a pen or a decal or something that says I was there. I'll have four regular guests from the show. I'm not even naming them yet. It's top secret at this point. But you will love the show. It will be live. We love our listeners at Faith Radio. We just don't get to meet them enough in person. That's why we want to do this. We want to have you come on over. I mean, not all of you, because that would be too many at once, because we only have so many parking spots. But definitely go on the website, reserve a seat. We'd love to see you. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'll take a little break and I'll be right back. It is 9 minutes after the hour. Awfully glad you're with me on this Monday, October 15th. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio. Recently, Mary sent us a note and said this: I know that God loves us. I know that His mercies are new every morning. But I also know that He has called us to encourage one another, to help us get an understanding of love, forgiveness, grace, and the gift of eternal life. And Faith Radio helps me do just that. Thank you, Mary, and thank you, friends, for making stories like Mary's possible. Your ongoing monthly support of Faith Radio keeps us going and growing. Whether you listen over the air, online, or on demand, Faith Radio is delivering relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching thanks to you. If you're not already a member of the monthly support team, would you consider joining? You can give a gift today online at myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Thank you again for listening. Thank you for praying and supporting this ministry. God bless you.
Your story matters. Share your experiences about how the teaching on Faith Radio has impacted your life by calling the Faith Line. Your testimony of what Faith Radio means to you and what you enjoy listening to could be used to encourage other listeners. Call 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484 to leave a message on our Faith Line.
Welcome back. It is 10 minutes after the hour. Awfully glad that you're with me today. Looking forward to my discussion coming up with Ray Comfort. I don't know if you know Ray, but he's written a lot of books. He's done a whole bunch of movies. Ray loves street evangelism. And if that is your gift, God bless you. I wish there was more of it, because I watch Ray in action and I go, whoa, are you effective? He is eloquent, and he is calm, and he can interact with people who are hostile and diffuse situations. So he's gotten so many videos on YouTube. If you have never seen one, I would recommend Googling that or whatever search browser you use, and Ray Comfort, C-O-M-F-O-R-T, just the way it sounds, and watch some of his street evangelism. I think he's from New Zealand or Australia. He's got that great accent. So I'm always jealous of that, because every time he talks, he sounds so much smarter than half the people in the room, which I like. So I always pray when I come to work, and I always say, Lord, I pray that your name will be glorified and that people will grow in their faith through my really smart guests and your word. Not in that order. I pray that they grow through your word and my really smart guests. I also pray that what I say on the air is hopefully something that's heard, because, you know, there's always that risk of confusion where you say something and people, you know, hear something different, and then they, you know, feel upset, or, you know, it's always difficult on radio, because sometimes you hear what you think you hear. And so I always pray that when I go on the air that I'm going to be, that what I say is what you're going to hear. And I pray that the same for my guests. Because it's always a challenge when you have so many guests. I have about, 20 guests on a week, something like that. And it's, I love to go in a lot of different directions with my guests. So I'm never quite certain what's going to come out. And I'm always praying that everything that's said is going to be God-honoring, and that we're going to be giving the greatest honor, respect, and glory to God's name in all we do here on Faith Radio. So that's my goal, and I hope you are enjoying my show and my guests. And we have a lot of nice listeners and nice listeners that write in and say they like the show. So that means a whole lot. Thank you for doing that. When you do it, it makes a big difference. So thanks. And I know everyone who's on air appreciates that as well. It's not just me, because it's sometimes you walk into the studio and you go, I get to keep you company or be part of your day. And to me, that is a gigantic thrill. And when you have so many listening options and you decide to tune into Faith Radio, I just want you to know I don't take that for granted. All right? All right. We're going to take about a 1 minute break and then get Ray Comfort on our studio line. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Ray Comfort is my guest, and you know I've been talking about him, and he's already on the line, so I'm going to cut right to the chase. Ray, how are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for giving us some time on the day of your release of your new book, The Final Curtain, Fame, Fortune, and Futile Lives.
Yeah, thank you very much. I love what they've done with the two books in one.
I know, it's very cool. You flip it over and it's From the Ledge, A Conversation with Comfort. It's fantastic. It's a twofer.
Yeah, I mean, two people can read it at once. You put it on a desk and you can read this part. The person on the other side can read the other portion.
Yeah. Well, I've been around in show business long enough to know that some of the most deeply depressed and dark people are in this business. They get all this attention and fame and people love them, and yet something is just terribly wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. The World Health Organization say that 350 million people suffer from depression, which is kind of depressing. but there's a reason for it. You know, you can have everything in life, and life can be sweet to you, but the Bible tells us that there's a gloom that hangs over every human being, a deep sadness, a haunting. And the world hasn't got a clue why people are depressed. The experts say we don't know why people get depressed, and there's no real cure for it. They try, you know, they've got modern straitjackets with medicines. Mm-hmm. Those really tough ones that paralyze you. They used to use straitjackets. Now they just put you into the zombie state and try and help you. And the side effects sometimes can be worse. Sometimes they can help, but sometimes they can be worse. But as a Christian, I'm deeply concerned that the world is not only not diagnosing it, but misdiagnosing it and telling anyone who's depressed that they've got a mental disease, which is absolutely not true. Life is super depressing for the best of us. I mean, we're going to lose every one of our loved ones. Dog's going to die. You know, there's hurricanes and there's tornadoes and there's cancer waiting around the corner, scaring the living daylights out of it. And then there comes death. And that's what I believe haunts every human being, according to Hebrews chapter 2, verse 14, 15. It says, "For as much as you and I are made of flesh and blood, God himself became flesh and blood that he might free those who, through the fear of death, were all their lifetime subject to bondage." All their lifetime.
Wow.
Subject to bondage through the fear of death. And I believe that's what the haunting is. And I have interviewed literally thousands of people one-to-one on video. And I often say to people, "You're afraid of dying." And I find that proud people say, no, when you're dead, you're dead. Your number's up. Who cares? But people who are honest will say, "Yeah, I'm terrified of dying." And that takes humility to confess that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this book actually has evidence to back up what I'm saying is true. In fact, I found there's one whole chapter in the book where some guy says, "I'm doing a movie on dying. Give me your thoughts. What's the best way to handle it?" And suddenly people opened up about their fear of death. They didn't have to put their name to what they said, and literally scores of people are saying, "This haunts me every day. I'm terrified of dying. I'm terrified of dying. I don't want to talk about it. I don't know what to talk about. No one can help me. This is hopeless." And yet, as Christians, we have the answer. Not that everything comes right with Jesus and he makes you happy, but he'll release you from the fear of death by giving you faith. And if I was going to jump out of a plane without a parachute, I'd be haunted for the whole flight, 10,000-foot jump. But if I had a parachute, my faith would bring down my fears. I'd be able to control my fears because I trust that parachute to save me, and that's what we have in Christ.
Mm-hmm. Ray, it's really disturbing when you think of people that have achieved so much success, a guy like George Michael or Robin Williams or even going back to Ernest Hemingway, and that yet there was no hope for them in life.
Yeah, well, Ernest Hemingway was an atheist, and so he chose to stand on his own oxygen hose and ended up blowing his brains out with a gun at his late 50s, which is horrific and tragic and terrible. And, you know, these people that get everything and they're happy, the rotten thing about life is the happier you are, the more you have, the more you've got to lose when death comes. So that makes depression it's worse. You know, if you're just a guy that's slaving for every meal, you're busy trying to earn money, look, you've got sort of some hope that things will get better. But when things have got better and you've still got that fear of death haunting you, life can become depressing. And what makes me upset is when these people who are depressed, because they think are told they're mentally ill, which adds to their depression. I mean, can you imagine that, being a celebrity? And you get depressed about dying. You don't tell anyone. You go to a doctor. He says, oh, you're mentally ill. Newspapers get it. So suddenly you're mentally ill, and everyone's looking at you sideways to wonder what you're going to do and say next because you're slightly insane. And so it becomes even more depressing and heaping more burdens upon the shoulders of these celebrities by telling them they're mentally ill, which seems to be everyone's going in that route today, which means 350 million people worldwide are mentally ill. There's only you and I left.
And you've had your share of some anxiety attacks and some debilitating stuff, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I find amazing, Ray, just because you've got so much optimism and you've got so much enthusiasm. I go, this guy has never been depressed. Come on.
Man, when I look in the mirror, I get depressed because as I get older, everything's
right.
Falling off.
Right.
But anyway, the book is written where I take celebrities and I talk to them, even if they've died. I have an imaginary conversation with Robin Williams and tell him that he wasn't mentally depressed, that he was a thinker. And when he lost his best friend, the guy who used to play Superman, I've forgotten his name.
Christopher Reeve.
Christopher Reeve, it was his best friend, and he died horrifically, suffocating, because he broke his neck, and that caused Robin Williams to go into deep, deep depression because of his own mortality. And so I share with him how I can identify in a small way what it's like to go into darkness, because I went into darkness for about 5 years. For a year, I couldn't have a meal with my family. It was too traumatic, and I write about that just to say that I can identify with all these people and comfort them with the comfort that I'm comforted with. And so I'm praying God uses this book. And the reason there's two books is my publisher, just before this book came out, contacted me and said, you've already got a book on suicide. What are we publishing this other one? I said, I'll tell you what, let's combine the two. And they did. And the second book is an imaginary conversation I have with a guy who's sitting on San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge about to kill himself. And I say something to him that transforms him and changes his thinking. Let me just tell you what I said. Something I said to the guy. It's a paradigm shift. A gentleman who was blind got on a bus, and someone on the bus immediately stood up and gave that blind man his seat. Was that a good thing to do? What do you think?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. It was a bad thing.
Okay.
The guy lost his job because of it, because he was the bus driver.
Okay.
And that's called a paradigm shift. When you hear extra knowledge like that, just that little bit of knowledge,
right,
instead of saying that was a good thing, you say that was a bad thing. A bus driver shouldn't give a blind man a seat.
Right.
And so knowledge can transform us. And that's what I say to the guy who's going to jump off this ledge. I give him a paradigm shift, a little illustration like that. And I says, if you'll just let me talk to you for a few minutes, I will change your mind radically, 180%, with knowledge that you haven't yet come across. And so it's very, very fascinating and very interesting. So you've got the two books in one. One is looking at a whole stack of celebrities either committed suicide or are deeply depressed. And the other is that that novel about the guy who's going to jump off Golden Gate Bridge. And, you know, I've been giving away the one of those books, the one on that I just mentioned, to people I interview on camera. And I've been embarrassed when I give it to them. I say, here's a book on suicide. You may not get depressed yourself, but you may know someone who does. And they go, most people go, wow, thank you so much. I sure need this. So there's a lot of people out there that are super depressed and don't know why. And so this book's going to give them light. I pray God uses it. Because we've got 45,000 people committing suicide every year in the U.S., plus 500,000 end up in hospital with attempted suicides. 500,000. And so there are your neighbors, there are friends and family that may be contemplating suicide. And one scary sign that someone's about to commit suicide is that there are no signs. That's the scariest one.
Yeah.
And so we've got to look at those around us and talk to them and have open conversations with them, because you don't get rid of the pain. If you commit suicide, you pass it on to your loved ones.
Yeah. So, Ray, how do we address the issue of faith when we're talking to someone who is just really depressed or someone that's even talking suicide?
Well, never be hesitant to give them the gospel, the biblical gospel, to take them through the Ten Commandments and say, look, do you think you're a good person? If they say yes, see, do you realize that lust is adultery in God's eyes? Have you ever lusted, ever stolen, ever lied, ever used God's name in vain? And then tell them, look, Fred, I'm not judging you, but you've just told me you're a lying thief, a blasphemer, and an adulterer at heart.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to face God on judgment day, and what are you going to do to escape hell? And then you tell them that God's provided a Savior. See, if someone's going through a hard time, you don't hold back the gospel. It's like if you've got a parachute for someone on a plane and they've got a broken leg and they're hurting, do you not tell them about the parachute because they've got a broken leg? No, you just hope they don't get distracted. Our YouTube channel has got 61 million views, and it's got video after video of people hearing the gospel. And so we encourage people to go to YouTube. These are completely free. Just type in livingwaters.com. Excuse me, I got tadpole in my throat trying to evolve into a frog.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch video after video of people hearing the gospel and watching their reaction and how they're appreciative and say, thank you, I never heard this before. So over 61 million views, and it's just Living Waters on YouTube, and you can watch them freely.
Mm-hmm. In the book, you suggest, Ray, that atheists sometimes treat God like the way church members would treat someone running the sound booth. Would you talk about that?
Yeah, that's how most people treat God. You know, I've been in enough churches to know, because I've spoken to many churches, that nobody thinks about the sound man unless something goes wrong. You know, you hear a wail come through the microphone and echo, so the whole congregation turn around and stare at the sound man like, what are you, an idiot?
Yeah.
Don't you know what you're doing?
Uh-huh.
But when things are going good, they don't even think of him. You know, you can go 50 services a year without a wail from a noise from the sound, and no one thinks of him. And that's how people treat God. He blesses us with life and color and beauty and birds and trees and music and all these wonderful blessings of love and laughter and food and friendship. And yet when something goes wrong, a loved one gets cancer or someone gets killed in a car accident, the fist goes up. God, where are you? How dare you do this? And they're not thankful when things are going good. So it's very important when things are going good to be thankful and grateful to God for his many blessings, because Jesus warned that the rain falls on the just and the unjust. And we get wet just like non-Christians, and bad things happen to Christians as much as they happen to non-Christians. But Jesus told that story about the man who built his house on rock and the man who built his house on sand. If you're built upon the rock, the teachings of Jesus, when tragedy comes, you'll stay strong and firm because you've established your life upon the rock of the teachings of Christ. And you know that all things work together for good because God loves you and you're called according to his purposes.
Mm. Boy, the numbers of people with suicidal thoughts and depression is alarming, and it's even more alarming with how young it's reached. It's reached such a young crowd. They're talking about suicide now at ages that just shock me, Ray.
Yeah, 10-year, 11-year-olds, it's horrific, and it's because the world doesn't value human life like we as Christians
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
You know, they teach them in universities, you're nothing but a beast. A dog is more valuable, you know, or just as much of value as you are. And
mm-hmm.
Richard Dawkins, the Pied Piper of atheism, says that the human fetus is about as valuable as a pig. And that's
wow.
what they believe. And so these kids are growing up without any sense of having any worth.
Yeah.
They are created in God's image.
Ray, you're the best. I love this book. Thank you for writing it.
Oh, could you mention the book? The title would be great. Thank you very much.
Yep, The Final Curtain, Fame, Fortune, and Feudal Lives. And on also the other side of the book is From the Ledge, A Conversation with Comfort. You get two in one. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute.
One, two, three, four.
Welcome back to the show. My guest on our studio line is James Emery White. He is the founding and senior pastor of Mecklenburg Community Church. It's a suburban megachurch in Charlotte and is often cited as one of the fastest-growing church starts in the U.S. Former president of Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, he's written several books. The one I want to talk to him today is called The Rise of the Knowns, Rethinking the Church, What They Didn't Teach You in Seminary, and The Church in the Age of Crisis. Those are a bunch of his books, but I want to talk about The Rise of the Knowns. He's with me today. Hello, James.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Just getting started on Monday, and I was looking at your list of accomplishments, and then I was also looking at how young you look, and I'm highly suspicious of you right from the start.
I have no idea what to say to that.
Well, but it's impressive. Your church, I just would love for our listeners to hear a little bit about how your church got started and what it's grown to. It's just amazing.
Well, we started as a church plant, and I had the honor of being the planter of it back in the fall of 1992, and started with just my wife and I and our kids, started in a rainstorm with 112 people at that first service, and through the strength of my preaching, I had it down to 56 by the third week, cut it in half. But and it began to grow from there, and today we have around 10,000 or more active attenders. We have five campuses. But the real yay God is that over 70% of our growth comes from those who are previously unchurched.
That's fantastic.
And that's what we're most passionately committed to, mm-hmm. reaching the unchurched.
There is obviously a disturbing trend going on in the world today where more and more people are identifying as having no religion whatsoever. We call these the knowns. So are the knowns, do they come from a church background, or are they atheists or agnostics, or is it a combo platter?
Yeah, what happened is that this trend really is a fairly recent one, but it's exploded over the last, say, 15 years or so. And when we say the rise of the nuns, what we mean is that when a survey is done, a sociological survey or some type of polling, and people are asked about their religious or spiritual background, increasing numbers are not putting down Baptist, Catholic, Christian, Presbyterian, anything. They're saying, I'm nothing. I'm a nun.
Mm-hmm.
And so that has risen to now about they have now become, as far as a religious block, the largest single religious category in the United States and the fastest growing. There are more nuns than there are Catholics, and there are anything. And rising very, very rapidly. They are the fastest growing religious group.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit about so they would consider themselves maybe at best spiritual but not religious.
Yeah.
But they are not leaving Christianity, for example, or any other defined faith to go to another one. They're simply saying, I'm nothing. I'm officially unaffiliated with anything, and it's a rejection of a formal doctrine or dogma or a particular religion or defined identity or category.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little stuck on my opening mistake where I called them knowns, because I heard someone say, well, I have no religion, so I call myself a known, and I'm going, but you mean none, so I appreciate both. Maybe I heard it the other way.
So they both could fit.
They both could work. Okay. So what are some of the reasons people are giving for going this direction?
Well, there's really two things. One is what social scientists would say, which, various processes in our culture like secularization and privatization and pluralization and all these big 50-cent words about cultural processes that are shaping. And those things are all true. But when you talk to a nun, when you say, why is this, what box you check, they would say things like lawyers, guns, and money. And what I mean by that is that's a ripoff of an old Warren Zevon song.
Oh, yeah.
They do fall into those three categories. They feel like they would say, in terms of the lawyers' dynamic, that I'm going to talk about Christianity in particular here, that Christians have politicized everything, and that it's too intertwined with politics, and they everything is an agenda for us. And then in terms of guns, they would say you guys are mean and hateful and bigoted and judgmental and homophobic and everything else you want to throw in. You guys are just not nice people and loving people, and you're not even nice to each other. You're very, the smallest of disagreements theologically between you just is bitter blood feuds. And then the money thing is just the raw materialism, whether it's from televangelists or megapastor mansions. It's just there's a distaste in their mouth about all of those aspects of, in their minds, organized religion or any type of defined faith. And they would also throw in, power plays and sex scandals, and everything else has just tarnished the image of any defined religion. But it's just become now that they aren't simply in church. So, I just don't want to be affiliated with any of those. I don't want a defined category put on me. And so that's the reasoning they would give.
Do they have a point?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's a sad commentary that when you ask them, why are you a nun, they would say, are you, I mean, well, let me put it this way. I remember when I first started MEC, we did a survey of unchurched people and just asked them, why don't you go to church? They didn't know who we were. They didn't even know I was there to plant a church. They were just kind of shooting from the hip. Second biggest reason they gave was churches have too many problems. And one guy actually wrote in, he says, I've got enough problems in my life. Why would I go to church and get more? And so that's whether it's real or not, that is often the persona that accompanies faith.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious as to how you are doing addressing some of these concerns that they have. And also, I'm dying to find out when one of these nuns come into your congregation and come into a saving faith, what happens to their mind and how they start to respond differently, because that must be fun for you to see.
It's an absolute blast.
Yeah,
and like I said, it's almost all we traffic in. 7 out of every 10 people who come to MEC come from an unchurched background. Most would have said that they were nuns. Well, the reason how they get here is pretty simple. I mean, they're invited by a friend. That hasn't changed in 2,000 years. A culture of invitation and Christians reaching out to non-Christian friends is the heart of all growth. The dilemma is that in our day, so many Christians are isolated from non-Christians, almost living in a gospel ghetto of sorts, that they're not able to even begin the penetration into the unchurched community. But what we do and work very hard at is to be very intentional about building those relationships, reach out and invest in them, and invite them into settings and services and events that help them process and explore the Christian faith, help explain the Christian faith, how it can intersect the deepest needs of life, and essentially begin making the case, much like Paul did on Mars Hill.
Mm-hmm. James, how do we get out into the world and be effective and have a strategy where we can be in the world but not of it and start to connect with the lost and get them to the place where we can get them to church?
Well, I would suggest just take up residence where you are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think all of us, we try to make it very natural at MEC, kind of like sharing gossip over the backyard fence.
Yeah.
We can share Jesus that way, like we would talk about a good restaurant or a movie we saw or a book or something on Netflix. And so all of us have friends. We have family. We're involved in athletic activities with our kids or school programs. And it's just about being relational and striking up conversations and letting it be very authentic. And so, you know, if somebody, I'm standing next to another dad and we're watching our kids play soccer, and he says, so how was your weekend? You know, I might say, well, you know, it was pretty good. Grilled out here, did a little lawn work there, went to church. That went great. Kids love it. And learned a lot there.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, good weekend.
Yeah.
9 times out of 10, he's going to say, you go to church? Man, I gave up on that ages ago.
Yeah.
You know, I used to feel that way too, but man, this is it can be different, and you know, and you got to check it out sometime.
Yeah.
It's amazing how something as simple as that can be life-changing.
Yeah. You know, you talk about churches as car-making assembly lines. Would you explain that idea?
Well, the mission of the church in terms of the Great Commission that Jesus gave was essentially to turn irreligious people into fully devoted followers of Christ through the centrality of the local church. And so we're trying to evangelize the lost, we're trying to then assimilate the evangelized, and then we're trying to disciple the assimilated, and then we're trying to unleash the discipled to go back out and start evangelizing the lost and being salt and light in our world. It's not complicated, and it's been that way for 2,000 years. Well, when I use a car assembly line that I often sketch out in explaining it to people, like, the church is much like this car assembly line. On the front end are all the raw material needed to build a car, the rubber, the chassis, the wire, the metal. And as it moves down the assembly line, a car is assembled, and at the end of it, it goes off onto service in the roads. The dilemma is that a lot of churches specialize in one short segment of the assembly line. They take already built cars and keep them polished for the showroom floor.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure the tires are inflated and the fluids are filled. But there's no sense of making cars, and there's no sense of cars going off the assembly line for service. And what I argue for is that the church is the entire assembly line, and it begins with that raw material of the unchurched. And our goal, no matter how or where people come into the life of our missional enterprise, our intentional focus has got to be on making cars, that raw material, seeing it all the way through to the assembly line and rolling off.
I love that. That's a great picture. I will always remember that. It's great. Let me take a little break. James Emery White is my guest. We're talking about his book called The Rise of the Nuns, Understanding and Reaching the Religiously Unaffiliated. We'll take a short break and be right back. Welcome back to the show. I have on our studio line James Emery White. I love his resume. It's quite impressive. He is the founder of the church in North Carolina called Mecklenburg Community Church in Charlotte. He is also the former president of Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary and has authored several books. The one we're talking about today is Rise of the Nuns, Understanding and Reaching the Religiously Unaffiliated. James, I would appreciate if you would chat about how we seem to be always shopping for the next best church or the next church that's going to meet our needs. Certainly is a far cry from how I grew up. Now there's more of a consumer mentality. What's with that?
Oh, I think you've nailed it right on the head in terms of it's really the bane of the Christian faith today. It's killing us. I talk about it in terms of spiritual narcissism. Narcissus was the person in Greek mythology who was captivated by their own reflection, so much so that they passed their reflection in water one day and just stayed there transfixed for the rest of their life, unable to do anything but gaze at themselves. There's a spiritual narcissism that has invaded the church, where the needs of the individual believer, that the already convinced, have become everything. So the church exists to serve the already convinced. As opposed to the person who doesn't even believe in Jesus yet. In other words, it's not missional at all. And that's informed our rhetoric. I mean, if you listen to how we talk, we say things like, I need to go where I'm fed. I need to go where I'm ministered to. I need to – that we walk out of a worship service and say, well, I didn't get anything out of it. Well, quite frankly, that's heresy. If a worship service is evaluated by what we get out of it, then we've made ourselves the center of worship. The real question of a worship service is, did God get anything out of it?
Right.
Who cares whether you did? You're not the center of it.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with being fed. I need to go where I'm fed. The average Christian has been so ridiculously well fed that they could try to act in obedience on what they know from now to the day they die and never accomplish it all.
Yeah.
The real question is, are you learning to feed yourself and feed others? Same thing with ministry. The goal is not for you to be ministered to. The goal is for you to find your spiritual gift and put it into play with your passions and personality type with a towel over your arm and a basin of water ready to wash feet wherever need be. So there's a sense where we've just made everything about us and turned inward. And that's what's fed, as you mentioned, the consumer mentality and kind of the next thing, where you have Christians in any community running around just desperate to go to wherever they're going to get a consumer fix, wherever their particular needs are going to be most met, or they feel they will be, or wherever it's just like the hot thing, where the hot youth pastor is, or the hot new minister is, or the hot new program is. And there's almost an insecurity among some Christians that they've just got to go to wherever they feel like it's happening, because they can't not be where that is. And this is also, I mean, I'm running wild here, far from your question, but it's also why Christians are so taken with Christian celebrities, whether it's Tim Tebow or Bono or whoever, because we're so insecure. It's like we get our security through either of these it ministries, it churches, or it celebrities, and it's just a sad commentary.
I just love what you just said, because I agree with it completely, and it makes me sad that there's so much racing around looking for significance, and there's a certain sadness when people have this consumer mentality where can I be fed, and I even listen to some of the worship music, and it's all about, you know, God doing things for me versus me worshiping Him.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, so I'm curious if. There are certainly a lot of pastors, people in churches right now listening going, all right, we're having a hard time reaching the nuns. So what can we do? I need some advice here.
Well, since I would do a shameless plug
okay.
to have them visit the churchandculture.org site, which is not only just hosts my blog and resources, but has a lot of material on there for pastors and church leaders. And that's churchandculture.org. And so, and the book that you mentioned, The Rise of the Nuns, was totally written to not only expose this, what's happening, but also explain how you can really begin to penetrate that culture. And so there's a whole lot in there that would be hard to reduce to a soundbite. But it does take fresh attention to explaining things, fresh attention to how we do our outreach and how we do even weekend services and some sensibilities and sensitivities we need to have. But if I had to say one thing, Bill, that is just critical, it's just to realize that when you're dealing with a typical unchurched person today, your starting point is radically different than it was even 10 years ago. And the analogy that I often use is that we've moved from an Acts 2 world to an Acts 17. In Acts 2, you had Peter speaking before the God-fearing Jews of Jerusalem, and the people he was speaking to had an awful lot in their spiritual pedigree.
Mm-hmm.
They were monotheists. They believed in the inspiration and authority of the Old Testament. They believed that a Messiah was coming. They had the Judeo value system. You name it. I mean, it was amazing what they had in their spiritual pedigree. And Peter gave a talk that assumed that was predicated on that, which was brilliant. But you move to Acts 17, and you have Paul on Mars Hill. These people did not have a spiritual background like that. They had no knowledge of the Old Testament or the prophets or Moses or anything. They never even heard the word Jesus, much less Abraham. And so Paul, being a good missiologist, knew he had to build a different bridge and have a different starting point. So if you look at Acts 17, he goes all the way back to creation and begins to work his way forward and doesn't get to Jesus till the very end. The concern I have today is that we're taking an Acts 2 approach in an Acts 17 world, and we're wondering why we're struggling. It's a different world. The starting point is different. The degree of spiritual and biblical illiteracy is profound, and the questions have changed. And so when you're dealing with trying to reach into the nuns of our day, so much of it has to be informed by the new reality that they constitute. And so hopefully the book will help serve people and have their eyes open to exactly the kind of dynamics that need to come into play.
Mm-hmm. James, as I think about your church, and I think of 70% of its growth has come from the unchurched, which is, I have to wrap my head around that. That's just unbelievably phenomenal. But taking that market group, that demographic group, what have they taught you? What have they shown you? What have they revealed to you that made you go, I didn't see that coming?
Well, I have to be really honest. There's not a whole lot that has really surprised me like that, although
okay.
It's a very good question. But I didn't become a Christian until I was 20.
Okay.
And so I get it, and so I'm not surprised that when how messed up you can make a life. I'm not surprised at the value choices and decisions they've made. It's like in many ways we're the weird ones; they're the normal ones in terms of culture. What I find so interesting is if I were to try to answer it, it would be incredibly receptive. They actually are. If you'll just, it's not really what we say, it's how we say it. And I certainly don't pull this off with any regularity, but what we're after is to kind of do it the way Jesus did, where he could shoot straight, tell the truth, confront sin, be honest with people. And then when he was done, they invited him to their keg party that night.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow he pulled that off. And I think that when we can do that, it's amazing the penetration that you can make in people's lives, because they still have a hunger, and they have a deep spiritual hunger. There is, as Pascal said, a God-shaped hole in all of us. The Holy Spirit is running wild and free and calling people to him. And so if we can step up to the plate and participate in that, it's an amazing adventure.
Mm-hmm. James, I know there's people listening that that are Christians who have raised their kids in a Christian home, and now they're in their 20s and they're off on their own, and they're coming home for Thanksgiving and saying, yeah, you know, I'm kind of not going to church anymore, and I guess I'm kind of a nun now, I guess. How do we go about talking to them on a personal level?
Yeah, I wouldn't overreact.
Okay.
I'm, you know, I'm not a family therapist, but I did raise four kids, and now I've got nine grandkids, and all of them are in vocational ministry, and they all love Jesus. And so as I reflect back on what we did right and what we did wrong, when your children go through faith journeys, don't burn the bridges. Don't overreact. Just say, hey, well, I can understand that. Tell me a little bit about, you know, what's going on and how you've arrived there and what kinds of questions you're wrestling with, and just put your arm around them and just have a mentoring conversation, or even just a listening thing to where you're keeping the dialogue open. It's fine for them to have doubts and journeys and seasons. In fact, it's normal. But just don't freak out.
Because that's the default response is to freak out.
Talk with them and listen to them. And you'll probably be prompted with some really good things to share with them that'll help them think about it from another perspective.
Yeah. Well, I'm awfully glad you were able to do this show, and I certainly appreciate you taking the time. I love your book, and I love your church and all that's going on. And thank you for giving us all this wonderful wisdom and insight about the rise of the nuns and how we can be aware of what's around us and how to talk to them.
It's an honor to be with you.
Thank you. James Emery White has been my guest. His book, The Rise of the Nuns, Understanding and Reaching the Religiously Unaffiliated. You can check that out at Amazon.com. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Well, we won't take quite a short break quite yet. We recorded that with James Emery White earlier today, and what a fantastic interview I had with him, and what an interesting guy. And that book is to be read. That's a good one. Today is October 15th, and it is the last day to file taxes. If you do an extension, is taxes something you got to do every year? I sometimes feel very confused about stuff in life. Anyway, we got a great second hour coming up. Bill's Bible Study Part 2 is going to be happening in studio. And if you missed Part 1, consider yourselves lucky, because Part 2 is just around the corner. And my friend Jay and Mike are in studio, and we're going to talk about what is it like. This is the third year of being in a Bible study. We meet twice a month, and this is going to be, what is it like to start in a Bible study? And what is it like? What have you learned? If you haven't learned much, then you got to rethink. But we learned a lot. We're learning a lot. Yeah, and then coming up November 1st, Afternoons with Bill Arnold live. That's going to be fun. That's going to be right here at the Mel Johnson Studio. And if you have never been over here, you'll be amazed at how beautiful it is. And you will see a live broadcast of the show right here in the Mel Johnson Studio. We'll have sugar-laced cookies and gasoline station coffee. It's going to be lovely. It's going to be quite an experience. So plan on making it November 1st. The seating is limited. And by that, I mean I have lots of seats open. So go to myfaithradio.com and Afternoons with Bill Arnold, and you can register to come be part of the live studio audience that day. I've got four of my favorite guests coming in that day. I won't even tell you the names quite yet, but it's going to be really, really fun. And you're going to have a great time. And we just love to meet our listeners. You know, you write us, but we want to meet you. We want to shake hands firmly while maintaining good eye contact and repeat your name in every sentence, because that's just what we want to do. We'll take a break and be back with Bill's Bible Study Part 2 in just a minute. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.